Well, our next guest on the program is the Sports of the Times columnist for the New York Times, who's written a powerful piece on University of Colorado football. We're pleased to be joined by Michael Powell. Michael, thanks for coming back and joining us.
Oh, sure. It's my pleasure.
A wonderful story. Let's give a little of the background here on what happened. A new coach hired for Colorado football, Mel Tucker, certainly an old school, tough talking kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, he came in and that was, you know, the old style football religion. I mean, you know, we're going to hit, we're going to show we're tough, we're going to hit. You know, my daddy taught me to, you know, told me that the way you play football is to play tough and to hit. And that was, you know, that's all fine if it's, you know, 1967. But given what we know now about, you know, concussions and subconcussions and all of this stuff, it was, it struck me as kind of startling, in its kind of lack of awareness. So, you know, to be fair, he's no different than, you know, 90% of the football, college football coaches out there.
No, but what makes it especially interesting is the history, a pretty fraught history that the University of Colorado has with players who have suffered greatly from the after effects of post-concussion syndrome.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I talked to one of those players and wrote of him the day before the column you mentioned, you know, a young guy who's 29 years old and is suffering like a, you know, somebody who's, say, in their 90s in terms of his struggles with his kind of mental and emotional health. He had been a big 6'8" offensive lineman. But then even, perhaps even worse, I mean, there's been, geez, near, you know, somewhere between a half a dozen and a dozen players who, that is former Colorado players, who have committed suicide. And at least in a number of those cases, it's clear that they had felt that they were struggling with their, you know, their ability to think clearly, with their cognitive capacity. And several of them had donated their brains to Boston University, which studies for, you know, the effects of brain trauma on brains. So, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty dreadful story. And again, frankly, it's not all that different than a lot of other schools. For instance, that coach that we mentioned, who's now the coach at Colorado, he had been an assistant coach in Georgia, and Georgia just, as chance would have it, had had 9 cases of players found with CTE or brain trauma, you know, and who had died and then donated their brains to, again, to BU. So, I mean, this is a problem that afflicts, this is not a problem of Colorado. This is a problem that afflicts football, and in particular, what I was focusing on, college football.
Well, what makes the Colorado situation somewhat unique is that a couple of people on the Board of Regents actually spoke up and expressed their concerns and asked the question that few have been bold enough to ask, which is, does the mission of a college and university square with a sport that so clearly can do damage to young developing brains?
That's exactly right. I mean, and it's this, you know, I think what had struck me from the get-go, and certainly these two very eloquent regents have addressed, is precisely that. I mean, these are institutions by their very definition, by their nature, universities and colleges that are dedicated to the development of young minds. And yet they are putting front and center in an athletic context a sport that quite arguably destroys those same brains, degrades those same brains. And right, is that an appropriate sport to be, you know, for a major university to be promoting?
We're talking with Michael Powell of the New York Times, and as you point out in your column, these players who get hurt or suffer post-concussion syndrome, develop CTE, there is no workers' compensation, there's no disability because, as they've pointed out time and time again, these are not employees of the university.
That's right. And so, of course, many of these players, most of these players, don't start to experience these symptoms until they leave the university. And as much as the university and university officials will say, and they said to me, oh, well, we care about these players. We want to, like, track them and know what's going on. The fact is that they're left out there without, you know, very often without health insurance, and without the kind of very sophisticated medical and psychological interventions that are needed to, at the very least, make their lives more bearable.
You also pointed out the irony, and it's not limited to Colorado, certainly, but they've got that beautiful new sports medicine facility right there. They talk a good game, as so many colleges do, about trying to make the game safer, but as at least one of the regents pointed out, is there a way to make that game safe and allow people to play without risking some sort of permanent damage?
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And that's and increasingly we're finding that it's not just the concussions, as horrible as those are. It's also the hundreds upon hundreds, and over the course of, even a college football career, many thousands of hits that you're taking in practice, you know, during games. I mean, all these kind of things, and it, if you will, think of the brain as kind of, you know, it floats in this fluid inside our body armor, which is our skull. And every time you're getting, you take a significant hit, that brain is kind of, if you will, sort of bouncing off of that skull. Many of those hits, the majority of those hits, are not concussions, but they have a cumulative toll, and that's kind of where the science has been taking us in the last few years, is to kind of understand that it's not just that hit that knocks you out. It's a series, you know, it's this kind of constant repetition of hits over many years. And again, I just think it's difficult for me to see how, if you're a university president, you're a university regent, how you square that sport with, you know, the larger mission of a university.
I know here in the state of Maine, the Football Coaches Association has proposed eliminating contact football, tackle football, for young people under the age of 14. So there is an increased awareness. And yet, as they get older, there's pressure from parents and communities to maintain the game. It has a tradition. It's not going away anytime soon. But is there a danger that down the road, the sport of football becomes, I don't know, something different, a blood sport perhaps, or one that's limited to rural communities and people on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale?
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think, look, that's a real concern. It's already a concern. I mean, already there, you talk to people in college, you know, in colleges and universities, and already their recruitment pool is changing a little bit. I mean, frankly, it's becoming more rural, becoming more inner city, essentially poor, you know, poor kids from poorer backgrounds for whom this is, you know, this is the way out. And it kind of creates this uncomfortable, it creates this very uncomfortable, sector whereby, you know, you essentially have middle and upper middle class fans cheering and watching, you know, a bunch of kids from essentially poor backgrounds, you know, battering each other in their brains. And so again, I think that raises or puts in a very acute relief, this, you know, kind of moral question for universities and colleges.
Well, we've dealt with that here at the University of Maine. Of course, Justin Strelzik, who played at Maine, went on to a career with the Pittsburgh Steelers and was a large part of the story of the film Concussion. And then not too many years ago, a Maine grad, Javon Belcher, playing for the Kansas City Chiefs, who was involved in a murder-suicide there. And then once his brain was examined, he had been suffering from CTE as well. And yet there still continues to be a disconnect among not just coaches, but upper administration at colleges and universities.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And to that extent, I mean, coaches do what coaches do, right? I mean, they're bought in, I mean, to some extent, to a large extent, I get that. you know, they'll try to, you know, take into account new protocols, practice, and that sort of thing to the best they can. But really, if there's to be a change, it needs to happen at the high end of universities. That is for, you know, university officials, regents, professors to step forward and start talking about what they know. I mean, all of these major universities, Michigan, Rutgers, their president is a neurologist, the president of Rutgers, and they just entered the Big Ten. You know, the notion that he would not know, you know, the potential effect or the real effect that all of this has on, again, the brains of what they always call student athletes is preposterous. Of course he knows. And I think that's where, you know, rather than in a sense picking on the coaches, I think, you know, what if there's to be change, it needs to come from on high.
So do you think we'll see a situation in the near future where a major university says, this is not the game that we should be involved in anymore, and we're going to get out for precisely those reasons?
You know, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, I would have said no. I think the fact that you've got two regents at a major D1 school speaking out like this, and you've now got doctors and researchers speaking out, and you've got, you know, I just was out in Arizona and all of the community colleges just dropped football because they couldn't afford the insurance premiums, which were so high because, again, of all the injuries and dangers of it. So I don't think, I would not rule out that in 10 years, if there's football, it looks very, very, you know, dramatically different than it looks today. Probably with dramatically less body armor and dramatically, dramatically less emphasis on it.
Well, two terrific pieces, the one on Colorado and as well the piece on Ryan Miller, available online, NewYorkTimes.com. Michael, as always, great talking with you. We appreciate you making time for us this afternoon.
Oh, sure. My pleasure, Rich.
Michael Powell, the New York Times here on Downtown.